And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 251. Hey, my name is Silas Lindenstein. Samantha Run is out on assignment today. But I am here for this show, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably, as I interview musician, singer, Stefan Mahendra. Stefan, I have an interview with him that I did on Zoom. I'm not sure, actually. He might have been in LA. I'm not sure. But Stefan is somebody I met recently. Well, I met him on the Zoom, I guess. But where I'd seen him was he was opening for Joss Stone. I went to a Joss Stone concert in Bremerton, Washington, which, if you're in this area, I don't think you expect that, but apparently, like, there's a bit of a blues scene over in Bremerton, Washington. Looking at their calendar and looking at other places that go, they have a blues festival that happens there. I didn't expect that. I just didn't. I have a lot of apparently internal prejudices about Bremerton, Washington, and what I expect there. And it just did not live up to those prejudices. So don't be prejudices. Anyway, I saw him open. He was the opener for Joss Stone. And he also has an EP coming out. So I was excited to hear about that. And I wanted to talk to him about that process. As we've been talking on the show about my musical journey that I've been taking, I wanted to know more about, why does someone take an EP versus an LP? I want to know more about his origin story, which he just told a little bit at the show. And one day I wanted him to tell you that and hear a little bit more about him and get to know him. A really, really, really great guy. And his EP, so the first single from his EP, I think, his latest EP started coming out like last week. So because I recorded this a couple, a week or two ago, I forget. But it was dropping this. So you can go find him on Spotify. I'm going to put a link in the podcast and on YouTube, the link to his Spotify station, I guess. And maybe his website. I'll find that address, put it in there. I really, if you like soulful music, you like music that, suave, I gotta say. Like, well, okay, I will say the difference between his album and what I saw was he had a real minimalist set, which is my kind of favorite for his opening. He was just a guitar and him singing, where you get to just really hear someone's voice. And his stuff that he's recorded is good. It's nice that it was, like full band, like there's drums and everything going on. So I personally love the stripped downness of somebody singing. So that was the perfect way to tempt me into listening to somebody further. But I think he's such a good musician. I loved hearing his journey into becoming the singer he is today. And I expect to hear a lot more from him. You know, it's a tough industry, but, he's clearly, other people are hearing of him and wanting them to open for him. And if you can make it in Bremerton, Washington, you can make it anywhere. I think they wrote a song about that. I'll look it up. Anyway, that's this episode. Samantha should be back next time, but I'm going to take this opportunity to let you know, I am going to want to give more of these interviews. So I will be doing some more solo interviewing if necessary. Schedules aren't aligning. I want to get back to, I loved having guests all the time. I love just getting to talk with Samantha about stuff. And my ideal is I can get all three of us on a call together, but I know interviews is what really got you guys listening to us in the first place. So we got to get more of those. And I've been getting them in. Been getting them in lately. It's not just me and Samantha being funny. It's all sorts of people, right? Huh? Okay. Anyway, I want you to sit back, relax, open your heart, open your ear holes, and listen to episode number 251, my interview with Stefan Mahendra.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Yes, this is Black and a Half, hosted by Silas Lindenstein and Samantha Rund. Black and a Half.
I feel like just happenstance that I got to discover you. And so that's why I wanted to like get you on the show. Joss Stone has been one of my favorite artists for 15 years. Like I discovered her the same time I discovered my wife, that I met my wife. And so I was listening to her a bunch as I was wooing my wife. And so I have this mental connection there. And I like by chance, I don't know why, I happened to type her name in and saw she was coming to the, what was it, over in Bremerton?
Yeah, and Admiral Theater in Bremerton,
Because she wasn't selling on Ticketmaster. And so right. I was like, what? That's the only place I had ever looked for her. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm going. I don't go to a lot of concerts. Like,
right.
My dad was a hippie, brought me up. I went to concerts all the time. So they're like, they remind me of going, hanging out with my parents.
Cool.
So I went there and heard you came out with just the simple, just one guitar, a guitar and you out there singing. And I'm like, I didn't know anything about the show. Like I didn't know this minimalistic thing is your act normally that minimal as well? Is it just you and a guitar?
It's for my own headline shows. I do a full band.
Okay.
But logistically for the tour, there was only space for two people. So that's why it just made sense to just come guitar and vocal, keep it really simple. And it worked, I think, even more in our favor because Joss's band didn't have drums in for this tour. Mm-hmm. So if I had come with like a full band and then her set being, without drums, that would have been a bit weird to like,
right.
be louder than her.
I just felt like, oh wow, she just picked a perfect person for this show to start it off with. Like I've always been a big fan of black box theater. Like that's how I started in entertainment. I don't know, whatever. I love the black box theater, just like a person, and let my imagination go with whatever they created. So I really loved just that you and the guitar player together. Like that was, I just thought it was really beautiful. I thought you have a wonderful voice.
Thank you.
Like, yeah, really enjoyed it. I started listening to your music to hear other things to see if it's like, I was trying to describe, it's like there's a soulfulness, right? That, by the way, you're from England, right?
Yeah.
I gotta know this. Why are English musicians so good at soul? Like I tell people all the time, I was like, they ask me what my favorite genre is. And I'm like, it's like a British soul. And I'm like, I don't know how this happened. Why are British so good at soul music? I don't think it's something we as Americans think of right away.
I have no idea. I think it might be because it's not like, traditionally the music of our land, mm-hmm. like we're more like have roots in, I guess, rock and punk and like those kind of genres.
Yeah.
So those who really like connect with soul, and I really find that they have like a real deep love for it. And yeah, there's not that many people doing it in the UK. And even if there are, they're not really that well supported either. So it's, I do think that those who really, really love it are going to give it everything they've got, because it's very difficult to actually break through as a soul or R&B artist in the UK. So
really, because I swear every artist that I get like into that discovers from the UK. I always look in, or even the US artists or Australia, they're always on tour in Europe. They're never here. Like, they're barely here. And they never come to Seattle. Like, nobody ever comes to Seattle. Like, they're just, no, too far. And so I was like, man, there must just be a huge support for soul singing in the UK that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, they did. So they definitely have a huge support for soul across Europe as well. Mm-hmm. I would say even more so than the UK. Countries like the Netherlands and France, they tend to love disco more, I think. Disco and funk more in France. Okay. But yeah, they really, really do love soul. I'd say more of the R&B side of things, not so much, but soul is like, you know, they had this whole genre called Northern Soul out in the UK as well, which is like soul that originated from the north of England, but still obviously like from US, like US sounding soul. But it just, yeah, there were a lot of clubs and parties that happened in that time. So yeah, it's the UK soul scene is incredible. Yeah.
And how did you know Joss from long ago? Like what got you involved in this tour?
So one of her backing vocalists mm-hmm. shared my music with Joss. And Joss was like, you know, if he's happy to come along, let's do it. as simple as that. So yeah.
It was, yeah. And was she just the fellow artist, the backup singer, were they a fan, a friend, or?
Yes. So they were a friend of a friend. And we had worked together on another gig and we became friends. And then I noticed that she was singing for Joss as well, which is funny because in the end, she actually wasn't on the same tour with Joss. Really? Okay. She actually got a last minute offer to sing for this band in the UK and they were doing an Asian tour. So she was really, really sad that like we couldn't be on the same tour together, but yeah, she was the one that basically hooked it all up.
Okay. How small is the music world, like that small? Like is everybody a friend of a friend? Like
I'm pretty sure. Like I've met random musicians in countries I've never been to before, in random music venues, and I've most of the time had someone as a mutual friend on Instagram with like most musicians. So yeah. it is really that small. Yeah.
Okay. And you did tell your story a little bit at the show, but I would love to, you know, the audience, when did the singing journey start for you?
Yeah, I think so. Before I started singing, I was actually playing the piano, and I started playing piano when I was around 11 years old.
Okay.
And yeah, my mum had basically forced me into lessons when I was a kid. And I think a lot of kids would be in the same position as me, saying that, you know, they didn't really enjoy it that much. And I was like forced into classical music, which I enjoyed for, you know, maybe and then started getting like more into my like 14, 15 kind of years old territory. And that's when I was like, yeah, this is not really doing it for me. I'm not really like one of the cool kids anymore. So I kind of quit the piano for about, I'd say probably a year or something. Okay. And then I decided to just start listening to different types of music. So I discovered like American gospel, and something about American gospel like really had me in a chokehold. I was like, what is this? Like, what are these crazy chords they're playing? And what are these like incredible singers? Like, where do they all like come from? And so I found American gospel and I started like venturing down the path of soul music and Motown and R&B. And I discovered, you know, Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye. And that's when I was really like, wow, like I want to like be able to kind of play these songs somehow. Like, so I started, I asked my mum to buy me a Stevie Wonder songbook for piano. And I learned every single song that was in that book. And that was how I kind of started my journey of singing, because I was so inspired by singing, playing pianists like Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, John Legend, for example. So yeah, that's kind of where the singing started.
And so what age was that for you?
That was, I would say that was 16, 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a little refreshing, because usually like I'll hear people say out of the womb, they just started singing and it was known.
Definitely like, not for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you ever self-conscious about singing, or was it?
Yeah, I was massively self-conscious, like probably until I was about 21, honestly. Yeah. Like I really, because I grew up playing piano, I always had something to hide behind. So, you know, I could be playing the piano and singing and it wouldn't matter because my mind was busy with playing the piano. But the minute I started singing without the piano, it was like I was naked in front of 10 million people or something. Yeah. It's just, and I just like really, really, really had to work hard to kind of get over that. It was almost stage fright. And yeah, like my voice would also, like, cause the voice is such a emotional, like physical, like singing is so emotional. So if anything's wrong in your mind, like it translates in your voice, like 100%. So all the nerves like would just come out while I was singing and it would just sound terrible. I would just be so bad. So I really, really worked hard to get to a place where I could like control nerves and almost, you know, try and be someone else when I would have to sing without the piano.
Right. It's I grew up as a theater guy. Well, the grow up, I went to college and I started doing theater. I'd done a little bit. I remember being asked to join a chorus in music class. They're like, hey, do you, the teacher, he was the hip guy in my, you know, the school. He was the teacher with the earring, right? He was like, hey, I want to join the choir. And I'm like, no. And he's like, oh, we need guys. And what was funny was whenever somebody had brought it up, it was always like about the idea of guys, we need guys to sing. And it was never about like, no one ever said you sound good or hey, I think you'd love to hear you. It was always just like, they just need a guy. And yeah. So there's no encouragement. And I had fears in a lot of ways, but I got over everything except singing. Like, I was in a musical in college and I was playing Charlie Brown in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. And I was crying before in the bathroom before the show. I was so scared. And I don't know what it is. Like, I feel like there must have been little comments made over the years that just made me self-conscious. And like I've been doing voice lessons now for the last 4 months. Like I'm
Congrats.
4 or 5 months. Yeah. I mean, it's almost therapy for me as well. I started, my life changed about a year ago. I went to Nashville, just as a plus one for my wife to go. She was in a conference and it opened my ears up to music that I didn't normally listen to that much. Like we went there and I saw Jelly Roll was playing at Nash at the Grand Ole Opry. And I was like, Jelly Roll? I'm not going to go see Jelly Roll. 2 months later, he's like one of my favorite people. Like I'm listening to all his music. Yeah. I started learning guitar a year ago for the first time. Like I always wanted to. I tried once and I was like, it's hard. I don't get it. And And then I started taking lessons, and like my path has been on this like musical journey. This is my musical era, I guess. If I was a Taylor Swift theme, yeah, that's my music era now. And so that's why when I saw also discovering Joss was in Nashville, and I was like, wait, I was okay, just in Nashville.
Yeah.
Like what? Everything's coming around toward music for me. And so the singing has been a new thing. But like you, like strangely, despite being terrified of singing, I did do I made a parody CD a few years ago where I sang. I took all the songs from the musical Frozen, and I made them about Star Wars. And I was fine with that because like you hid behind piano, I've always hid behind comedy. Like, because if people, I think what I've discovered is people laughed at me or laughed at it, I'd be like, well, that's what I was trying to do. Like, I wasn't, it's not serious.
Yeah.
Like, and so, yeah, it's been, so I've been trying to talk to people about like singers. I have a lot of singer friends, which isn't helpful either when you're trying, like you're self-conscious, like you guys are great singers. How can I, I'm not like that.
Well, we all started somewhere, right?
Right. Now, your voice, when you hear your voice now, does it sound normal to you? Or like, I talk about that, how it sounds different than what you have in your, I forget what they call it. The internal voice sounds different than what you hear in a recording. What's your reaction when you hear your voice? Is it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been on a whole journey with this. Like, I remember when I first was in that Stevie Wonder phase when I was like 16, I would just learn by imitation. So I would really, you know, really, really try and sound like exactly like him. and I think that was like a real great way to learn how to use my voice in different areas of my voice, because like Stevie's range is ridiculous. And obviously like when you learn through imitation, like you're just trying to reach the same notes in the same way he's hitting the same notes. So you learn a lot about how your voice works. But I think when I would sing something by myself on the piano, you know, my like true voice would be very different.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like dependent on what song I was singing, is like what voice I would put out.
Just like thought, almost like characters. Like, did it feel like a character? Yeah, okay.
Exactly. So it took me like really long to find my own voice, which is like what I sound like when I'm just singing with no thought of like imitating anyone or like, you know, trying to cater to a certain, I don't know, audience group that likes Stevie Wonder or something.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I can honestly say it probably took like 7 or 8 years to like really get to a point now where I'm like, I know what my voice sounds like. And when I sing in the room and I hear it, I know that's exactly what I'm going to hear on a record when I record music. Whereas before I would sing and in my mind, I would think that I sounded like Stevie Wonder. when in reality, I sounded like a dying cow or something. So it was a real like realization when people started saying, why don't you record yourself so that you can, you know, get better that way? And if they were telling me that as a really big hint, or like whether they were actually just trying to tell me a good way to practice and get better, I think I know the answer to that one. But I do think that actually recording your voice and listening to it back and being like learning to be comfortable with it is a whole other thing as well. It's like, yeah, you don't want to be imitating someone, but you can finesse your voice to make it more desirable to your ears and to others' ears. It just takes a while to figure that out.
My teacher had told me, she was having me do these exercises and I'm doing it. And I was like, I screwed up there. And she's like, you got some vibrato going. And I was like, what? No, I was trying to hold the note. I couldn't hold it. She was like, no, that was vibrato. Like, what? Are you kidding me? Every time all these years, whenever that would happen to me, when I was singing in my, because I'm fine if nobody's around, right? I was singing my heart out. I'd hear that and be like, I just can't hold a note. And apparently I was making that vibrato sound. And I was like, wait, that's desirable? I thought I was just screwing up. Like, oh my God. So it's just been like this technique that you guys do is it's all, I've done voice class, but it was for theater. So we touch on the same areas. I think it crosses over a bit. And I've done a lot of vocal warm-ups for musicals, but
theater singers have like really good technique because they have to be able to support their voice and sing and project. So I do think that if you've got a background in that, like you have like all the right foundation to become the singer you want to become.
So I used to sit, I'd be in, if I was in the chorus and we were all there, I used to just mouth it when we were on stage. I wouldn't actually sing. I would just mouth it because I didn't want to screw everyone up. It was funny because I was surrounded by such good singers. Like, you guys are so good. I was a straight act. Like, I was always non-musical, straight actors. I was just straight. I was one of the musical people. I'm just in this for the character role. And then you threw me into the dance number for some reason, right? Okay, I did want to ask you, you have an EP coming out, right?
Yeah, first single is actually coming out literally UK time midnight, so West Coast time.
Oh, like today?
Today.
Oh, wow. Oh, geez, thank you for coming.
That's all right. That's
what is the an EP? What makes the decision right now between an EP versus doing a full length album?
And from what I understand, I'm pretty sure an EP is an album is longer than 30 minutes, I think, or eight tracks. Whereas an EP is a collection of tracks, but it's still not enough to be an album.
But what's the choice to what you're making a choice to do an EP, right? Instead of an full album. What's behind that? Is that an indie artist thing? Is this the hip thing to do now?
I don't know if there's like another reason, but for my reason for doing it is that I have like enough songs to put on an album, but the kind of industry that we're in right now, it's better not to put everything out at one time, because in each EP, like for example, this EP, I'm going to be putting a single out today/tomorrow, another single next month, another single from the EP the month after, another single in June, and then the last two tracks on the EP will come out in July. So it gives your music, when they come out as singles across a longer period of time, it gives your music a little bit more attention when they're coming out as singles. So you kind of draw people in with one single, and if you missed a bunch of people, it's fine because you got another single coming. Whereas if I would have just dropped the whole project, you know, a project kind of caters to fans. Like if you've already got a lot of fans that are really going to like wait for a project to come.
Right.
Whereas like the single idea is to recruit new fans and to.
Okay. So instead of one big event, you have like eight spikes, eight opportunities for you to make a splash.
Exactly. And okay. I'm sure you know, being like in the podcast world, there's some amazing playlists that you can get your music onto.
Yeah.
And you know, if you hit, you can't really pitch for these playlists if you only have like one project coming out. You can only pitch like one track. Whereas if you have multiple singles coming out, you can pitch it like 5-6 times and you can get all these tracks in different playlists, which results in new fans as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my brother Aaron's he's an A&R for United Artists for in the hip hop rap area. And he was explaining, I didn't know some people would pay to be on playlists. And
I know.
Like, I was like, what? I thought these are just people making their happy little lists. And they're like, no, yeah, pay me and I'll throw your new stuff on it. Like, that's wild. I mean,
there are those type of playlists, but the ones that I'm shooting for are the like official ones from, you know, Spotify and Apple mm-hmm. Music or wherever people stream their music. They have their own official genre playlist. So I've been on a lot of the Spotify and Apple ones, which is why I know the power of them, because people find my music through there and they like message me on Instagram and they're like, hey, I discovered you on, I don't know, Spotify's Neo Soul playlist. And I'm just
know what, it has worked. I've definitely discovered some artists because of it. And then just my Nashville trip, just amazing. You adding a couple people, like adding a couple people to your normal mix, suddenly new people show up. It's been pretty awesome. I'm interested now, like now that I've been playing you for a couple weeks here, you've been in my rotation. So now I'm like, oh, who else am I going to discover because of this?
I'm interested in that as well. I'd love to hear who what the algorithm chooses is similar.
I am investigating people a little more now because Spotify got me with an AI artist once. They suggested an AI artist and I was listening and I was like, this is the greatest song I've ever heard. This is the best. This is like a perfect song. And I went to show it to my wife because I was like, man, this hits everything that I love about a song. And then I look her up and I'm like, where is she on tour? And it was like, she had like 10 albums out this year. And I'm like, what? How is this possible? And started looking and realized she was AI. And then I was like, oh, it's too perfect. That's why it was so perfect. No flaws.
It's crazy though, that you were like, that was your initial reaction without knowing it was AI. Like you were willing to spend money on tickets to go and buy and like see the show, you know?
It's a struggle that I'm going to have now, is like, it made me feel a certain way. And then I got like, it was like I was catfished. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well now I can't feel anything, 'cause it was a robot.
Yeah.
Okay. And before we go here, I have every guest when they come on, the first time they come on, we have 7 questions that we ask them. It's the world famous 7 questions. And I just want to shoot these off to you real quick.
Okay.
Number one, what are you most nerdy about? And by nerdy doesn't mean like Star Wars or Star Trek, but what is that thing that you deep dive into, maybe know more than other people about it? You can just talk to about hours with like, what's the thing you nerd out about?
Airline points.
What? Like how to get them?
Like credit card points, airline points. Like I'm like super, super savvy with that stuff. Like, because it directly like impacts like my business as well. So if I'm super knowledgeable about travel costs and like if I can get a lot of things on points, it's going to really help me in the long run. So yeah, I know a lot about points.
That is a new one that we've not had that one yet. That is great. It's funny because once you said it, it actually makes total sense as something to nerd out on, because there are all these different ways you can get it that it's so like it's almost overwhelming. But that could be a hyper focus. Absolutely.
I mean, totally. Free travel is like like the best thing in the world. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Oh. I love food in general. I like so much. So a good steak.
Oh, good steak. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you like it? Well done. Like what do you
medium rare.
Medium rare. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're from Britain.
Yeah.
I've visited, but do you think the British food gets a bad rap?
Yeah, and rightly so.
I've had this discussion with friends. Do you think British food is kind of misnamed now because it is British food more diverse than? Because I think when people think, they think like British food is the old British, like old England, but it's so full of everyone they colonized, right?
Yeah.
Has their food over there now. Like,
yeah, I think probably the most British food I'd say is probably the Sunday roast. And that's, have you heard of that before?
I feel like it's like my American brain has it as this like nice little like little dinner pot roast, and it's going to turn out to be something bloody or what?
No. It's like Thanksgiving out here.
So oh, okay.
It's basically roasted potatoes, some sort of cut of meat, vegetables, and then they've got these things called Yorkshire puddings, which are like short crust pastry, kind of like a hole that you pour the gravy into, and it's just honestly like when it's done well, there's nothing better. But unfortunately, and also same with fish and chips as well, that's like if it's done well, and unfortunately a lot of things in the UK aren't really done well unless you're in like a countryside pub that's like a gastro pub really knows what they're doing, that the produce is super fresh. Like a lot of the time, I think people are just lazy in the UK because they're also not working for tips. So, you know, they're getting paid the same regardless of like whether the food's good.
Yeah.
And most British people are just too polite to even send the food back if it's bad. So that's why I think that I've really enjoyed the food out in the US more, is because like they have a real passion and care for what they're doing, and not to mention the tips that they're working for as well. So,
oh my God, you've done something that hasn't, I've been so anti-tip for so long. And been saying we got to do it like they do in England or whatever. Don't tip. And I'm like, it never occurred to me that that's partly why my food might taste good. Is they're like, oh, they might not care. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm gonna have to rethink this.
It gets worked into the check anyway. So the service charge, like is probably I think 12.5%. is the max they can do in the UK, and it's in there whether you like it or not. So
so you can just your only choice is to not go back if you didn't like it.
I mean,
if you don't like the food.
My partner's from New York, and we lived together in London for the last 5 years before moving out here, and she was the first one to show me, when food's not acceptable, you send it back. Nothing like a New Yorker to like give you the honest truth. So kind of where I was like, I always thought it was just, you just don't do that kind of stuff.
Have bad food exists just because of politeness. Because it's too polite. It's too polite.
Exactly. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Milkshakes.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, but they have to be like premium ice cream milkshakes. I don't want none of that milk crap. Like it needs to be mixed with like thick ice cream, and then it needs to be freezing cold. I want to feel like I've basically just got ice cream in a cup, but it's just like easily just drinkable.
A drinkable ice cream. Is there a favorite flavor?
Usually some kind of mix of peanut butter, chocolate, Oreos. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Blended. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Number four. Well, what kind of music do you love besides your own? Besides your own.
Easy. I love soul, R&B, neo soul, and I've had a real soft spot for jazz, in particular an album by Chet Baker called Chet Baker Sings.
Okay.
And that's always the album that I put on whenever I'm stressed and I need to calm down about something. So I think you might enjoy it too. It's like incredibly like mood setting. Like if you really need to just be away from your thoughts for a while, or even just it's great for daydreaming as well. Like I really recommend it.
I will say, you know, I should have a Black and a Half playlist because I asked this question. And I will go and discover new music because people tell me about someone I haven't heard, but I hadn't really thought about making a playlist until we had that conversation earlier. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to check out the Chet Baker. Be very eclectic list. Okay.
Chet Baker Sings.
Okay. Chet Baker Sings. Great. Five. What do you love to create?
I like to cook. So that's for me like a creative process. I mean, the obvious one aside, like music, obviously, like I love to create music. I love to create dishes as well. I love to, you know, I really have a thing for making healthy lunches. So like big kind of salads with like roasted sweet potato and goat's cheese and, you know, different types of vegetables and some nice dressing, like homemade dressing. So yeah, it's
so that's like, what I like you described my wife's favorite salad, I think, right there. She was just
like, you know, like those kind of sweet green kind of bowls. Things like that. I like to make those.
Okay. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
You know, the basketball things in the arcades where you just try and like, I did that while I was on tour as well. I just love those.
Well, you go seek them out, or was there like one on the bus? Okay.
I seek them out, and bowling as well. I'm a real big fan of bowling. I love it.
Big ball or candlepin? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I grew up in Boston for a while and I learned the little handheld candle pin. So I always have to ask now, like, okay. Bowling's fun. Okay. And last question, number seven. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Definitely for my music. And also for how I treated others and helped others. So yeah, that's it.
That's great. I love that. Okay. So with your EP dropping, does that mean we expect you to be, are we going to see you out headlining around the country soon or?
Yeah, I have. So obviously the first track is out today/tomorrow, and I'm going on my first headline tour of the US and the UK in June. So I've actually got May 15th in Tucson, LA June 2nd, Portland June 4th, and then New York June 6th. I've been trying to get a Seattle date, but we'll see if it comes through, but those are the dates for now.
Definitely let me know if it's Seattle. Like I'm already like, oh, Portland. Yeah. Portland, I might be able to get down to Portland. I love that.
It's a super nice jazz club as well. It's called the 1905, and I think you'd really enjoy it. They're like really, really intimate, probably only about 50 seats, and I'm doing two shows, so there's like one early evening and one later evening.
That was what I loved about the Bremerton show. I'd never been to a concert that like in that kind of venue, like a smaller one. Like,
yeah.
Even like I was in the balcony. So I was further away, but like, you know, they just had those tables down below and I was like, I'd never been in a theater, and I was like, this is crazy, because I didn't.
I was so confused at like why there were tables in the room. I was like, this is not like any other venue I've seen before.
Yeah, no, but I just really love the intimacy, and I think that's what I enjoy about your music. I think there's an intimate tone to your singing that I feel like.
Thank you.
I don't know. It might be cheating that I saw you live, so it's easier to imagine you like right there and everything. But let me tell you, Stefan, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's great to see somebody's work first before they come on and actually like reach out and go like, I almost talked to you at the, when I was leaving, I was telling my wife, like, I want to say hi. I'm like, I turned to her and said, I'm going to get him on my show. That's how I'm going to talk to him.
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. And
absolutely.
Really enjoyed chatting with you.
Yeah. We'll drop links in the description or everywhere for you, for your new album. Wherever you prefer.
Amazing. I'll
send it to. Okay.
Wonderful.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, Silas.
That was the interview. I hope you liked it. Samantha loved it. I played it for her. She listened to it on her own. And she loved it. She's like, what a great interview. I'm like, I know. I got the guest in. So yeah, share, please go check out his EP. I know you're not gonna buy it because people don't buy music now, right? You just download it. But you download it and you stream it. So just go find them, make a playlist of his songs and just play them on repeat for like 30 days. And then hopefully we can help the Black and a Half Army can help throw him to the top of the charts. That's my. Also, yeah, we talk about this in here. Like ever since I put him in my, started listening, my suggested playlist and my daily mix list are changing. So not only do I get him recommended, I get other artists that have similar sounds as him, and that's always great. So do your playlist a favor, do your suggested songs a favor, and listen to Stefan, okay? And who knows? But catch him if he gets up to the Seattle area or you know, wherever he's playing. I guess it doesn't. I got listeners all over, so check him out. Look, go to his website, find out where he's going to be. Follow him on the Insta. That's how I got him. I messaged him on Insta, and they came out. Isn't that great? Insta is the great. It's the equalizer. I don't need a booking agent. I got Insta. Now, if only some of the other people will message me back, that'd be great. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. And till next time, Black and a Half.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Yes, this is Black and a Half, hosted by Silas Lindenstein and Samantha Rund. Black and a Half.